Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Tay, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Did you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, I've had a couple of different things. I experimented around some more with my De Sonora Velvet and making the espresso martini with it. And I found I liked it better by adding an ounce of cold brew to it, even though it didn't call for it. It just said the Velvet, vodka, and Kahlua. But I liked it better with putting an ounce of coffee in there. It just seemed to balance it out for me.
Oh, that sounds good.
Because that Velvet, you know, is a little bit, it's a little bit thick. And so that kind of thins it out. And it's also pretty rich. I mean, the richness of that drink, I could only drink a couple of them at the most because that stuff's pretty rich.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, I know they're calling it an espresso martini, I guess, on the label, but that's much more of a white Russian than anything. You got Kahlua, cream, and vodka, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, Di Sorona is an almond liqueur, but is it like a vodka almond cream situation?
I guess it is. I'm not really sure. I didn't really look at it too close. I just drank it. Maybe they
fair
were
enough,
going with what?
Fair enough.
They might have been going with what's most popular because right now, an espresso martini is more popular than a white Russian.
That's a buzzy phrase.
Yeah. Yeah. And then to go along, because like I say, those were too rich to drink too many of them. So I had my Guinness there to back it up because you can never go wrong with Guinness.
Nice light Guinness. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. See, the girls know me too. They just went to Kings Island and they brought back gifts for everybody. And they brought back what looked like a Guinness draft can of beer, but it's really was Guinness chocolates inside.
Oh, nice.
So they know me too well. They're bringing me my Guinness chocolates.
That sounds tasty. I think I've seen those on the internet before. Were they good? Did you try them?
Yeah, they're really good. They're like a chocolate ball with a Guinness cream in the center.
Oh, nice.
So they're really good. And the can looks just like a regular can. If you didn't pay attention, you know, when you pick it up, the weight, of course, is different. But just looking at it, it looked exactly like one of those tall black draft cans.
Wow. It's very cool.
How about you? Did you come across anything?
I was working a lot this week. I made a little video about it, but I had a customer order an Alaska from me, which was a drink I hadn't had before. It's like a yellow chartreuse and traditionally Old Tom gin. So I tried one of those and, it's always cool when I come across something I've just never heard before. That's very simple and easy to make. And it was really nice.
Just those two ingredients, huh?
And orange bitters, like stirred. So sort of compared somewhere like kind of a martini, kind of a gin old fashioned, but it was good. And then I also, after last week's episode, I've been making a lot of brambles. I bought some blackberries and some creme de mire, and I've just been doing some brambles. Delicious. Fantastic.
Well, I saw one of our listeners showing the paper plane that he got at a bar in New York. He was visiting New York.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're visiting. I don't know if it's a he or she. I can't remember the name. But they were visiting New York and they ordered a paper plane that looked like a really good one.
Well, it's a very, very hot drink of the moment.
Yep. You called it.
So speaking of restaurants in New York, I was turned on to the topic for today's episode by a chef at one of my restaurants. And we were both in the city during the COVID lockdown, and that was a weird time. Just mass confusion and suffering and panic and just weird, weird laws about how we were allowed to behave. And we were discussing some of the weird experiences we had during the COVID lockdown. And I don't think there was anything weirder than what was going on. Like when bars, they just started to be able to reopen. But there were a lot of laws specifically about how you could serve drinks. Like you had to have food to serve your drinks. And that led to a lot of like odd food being served. I don't really know what it was supposed to do. Like the theory, I guess, was that it would limit the amount of time that someone could sit at a table. Like, oh, you could only drink in the time it takes you to eat a meal. So then you gotta get up and go. But also like, I guess, it would keep you in your seat. And if you're up mingling, you're going to spread COVID. But if you're sitting down with food, you won't mingle. None of this is a practical solution. Like, this does not make sense in actuality. But there were rules that came down that bars had to serve food. And you know, it's a lot for bars to deal with that had already been absolutely drained from like over a year of being shuttered. So now you have to figure out how to serve food. So a lot of bars went very much the cheap route. They just would sell chips or crackers or something, pretzels. Yeah, there's food here. You can have food. And like some bars got really creative with it. There was like a bar in Buffalo that made the rounds for selling like a single piece of cheese or a single piece of charcuterie. Like, here's your single pepperoni. Or honestly, a snack that I think I would go for, especially when I'm drunk, just a handful of croutons.
Mm-hmm. I saw that they had the Cuomo chips and the Cuomo handful of croutons.
Yep. And there were a few that I personally encountered. There was a bar in my neighborhood that would serve you a bag of Fritos, which like Frito pie, I think arguably is a meal, which is like a bag of Fritos with like chili sauce and cheese. This was not that.
Yeah.
It was a bag of Fritos with ketchup squirted in it. Just Fritos covered in ketchup. And that
I like Fritos and I like ketchup, but I don't think I want Fritos covered in ketchup. Well, I don't know. It doesn't sound good.
I was like, it's not, they would just call it, they'd call it Cuomo nachos. And it was,
oh
yeah. Uh-huh. They give you a weird look if you actually like tried to eat it. It's like, no, you're not supposed to eat that.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. That's just satisfying the law.
Yeah, but eventually Cuomo like took his governing time, his high wages of his government employee time to sit down and decide what does and does not constitute a meal, and snacks weren't it. It was very arbitrary. Yeah. Like chicken wings, not a meal. Peanut butter and jelly, a meal. Bread, mm-hmm. not a meal. Like, I don't, it's dumb. It was dumb.
Well, you see, though, he had judicial precedents that he was setting this on. All those other things he considered, they're a side. You can't count a side. But there was actual judicial precedent that said a sandwich constitutes a meal because it had been to court previously.
That's true. Which is the bigger point. This is the thing, like, as I was discussing this, my chef and I were discussing, like, all the weird things we ate. He's like, well, you know, that actually is not the first time this has happened. That dates back well into history, and that is Raine's Law.
That's right. And the Raine sandwich.
Yes. So this actually precludes prohibition. So we're talking, like, the late 1800s here. And Raine's Law gets its name from a New York State Senator, John Raines, who was a Republican senator from upstate. And he and a lot of reform-minded Republicans had long aimed to do something about the drinking in the great state of New York, specifically the lax enforcement of Sunday drinking bans in the city. Like, there were already blue laws in place, from my understanding, but people mm-hmm. just kind of looked the other way. So blue laws being like, you didn't drink on Sunday, right? It's a high holy day. You don't drink. And it was supposed to start at the stroke of midnight on Saturday. Nobody paid attention to that. There were as many as 8,000 saloons in New York City that just looked the other way. And I mean, you know, it's not just, oh, because everybody's a miscreant. It's because there are many, in this New York City, there are many walks of life. You know, you had, I mean, for one thing, Jewish people who celebrate and recognize the Sabbath on Saturday. So they take their day. That's not Sunday, it's Saturday. But also you have, at this time period, you have immigrants working in the city, usually working 6-day work weeks, being exploited mm-hmm. for 6 days, and their one off day is Sunday. And now you're saying, now you can't have a drink on that day. Sorry. Too bad.
Yeah. Two ethnic groups that felt particularly targeted were Germans and Irish people. they were
people who you do not want to get in between them and their drink.
That's right. They were working, you know, the low wage labor jobs, manual labor and stuff like that. And Sunday was their only day off. And by God, they wanted to enjoy it.
I mean, fair enough.
And then there was a loophole for rich people, though.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if you had a private club, you could serve alcohol. If you had a hotel, you could serve drinks and food together, and that was fine. But those were famously places that, yeah, only the upper class had access to. So yeah,
it's like they said that a lot of people, they had in-homes, you know, servants that would prepare their meals. Well, Sunday was their one day off. So most of those people, the higher class people, would go to these fancy restaurants and the hotels and stuff like that for their meals on Sunday anyway.
Can you imagine working 6 days a week, sun up to sundown, for a bunch of rich a-holes, and then on your one off day, these same rich a-holes campaign politically that you don't deserve to drink on that day, so you can't get a drink on Sunday, the one day you have off from them, while they go and roll up to the bar at some swanky hotel and drink their faces off? Can you imagine?
That's right. Yeah,
to be served on by other people that are in the service area.
Well, they were not to be deemed that way. They were going to find some way around it, no matter what it took. It was some New York ingenuity.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like more like these Raines laws that went into effect, what was that, 1896? I mean, however much you want to argue, like, did it really target the poor? Was it a wealthy exception? I mean, look at everything else it did. I mean, there's some things, like it raised the drinking age from 16 to 18. Okay. But it specifically tripled the cost, and in some cases increased it by 10, if you're a beer bar, the cost of a liquor license. So it made it incredibly more expensive to have a liquor license. And yeah, it locked in like this stroke of midnight, you cannot have drinks in your bar, and the only places you can drink are in hotels or private clubs. So I guess we need more hotels and private clubs.
That's right. Well, then one of the other things they said, too, was that they had to leave all their curtains open.
Oh, right.
Because apparently on Sundays they would draw the curtains so that the police could have an excuse not to know there were people in there. Mm-hmm. So the police, they didn't want to monitor it real close either. So they had to live with those folks. So they didn't want to be in there telling them, hey, shut her down.
Yeah, whenever you question why now it's so common that police are policing neighborhoods that they're not a part of, maybe we should look back to the time periods when police actually were part of the neighborhoods they were policing. They actually had some class solidarity with them, which is actually true in this time period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you had to leave your curtains open so we could tell nobody was in there drinking.
Wow. But that did not stop New York ingenuity. First you had just immediately bars became private clubs. What does it take to be a private club? I just have to pass out membership cards, right? So I'm going to get some membership cards.
So they stood on the street corner handing out membership cards.
Yep. You're a member now. You're a member. It's a private club. Very exclusive. But you're a member.
Yeah. Just bring this card with you when you come. So we'll, you know, do the secret knock at the door.
Yep. And also, you know, a lot of saloon owners got into the hotel business. In a couple ways, you know, you got an attic, you got a basement. We need to have 10 plus rooms. So just build 10 tiny little cubicles in your basement.
Yeah.
Say they're bedrooms. And now you're a hotel.
Hang sheets in between them and just set up 10 cots down there. Mm-hmm. There was a big sale on cots during that time, a big run on them. People were throwing them up, and sometimes they would make deals with somebody next door.
Yeah.
That they would partner together. Look, you set up the rooms and I'll run the saloon. We'll cut you in.
Yep. Even like you're just a building, like a brownstone next to me that has tenants. Let's just say you're part of my business and I give you some money and you say you're my hotel.
Yep. There you go.
And of course, there's that thing where you had to serve food to be able to serve drinks. And they got real creative with that.
Yeah, it was the same type thing. They would roll out something real small, and it actually went before a court to get deemed that a sandwich was considered a meal.
Yeah. But what is the definition of a sandwich? It's something that many people have argued about, and maybe because of this time period, because I guess anything between two pieces of bread is a sandwich, right?
Right.
as exemplified by a slab of rubber, maybe a brick. These were things that were served during this era.
They said there was a famous playwright, Eugene O'Neill.
Yeah.
And he wrote the play The Iceman Cometh, and that's what he described was one of these Raine's Law era hotel rooms that they stayed in. And he talked about how shabby it was. And he said the sandwich was an old desiccated ruin of dust laden bread and mummified ham or cheese. Now, that was if they made any kind of, you know, effort to put it in there. But they didn't, you know, they didn't. It was supposed to be edible, but you weren't really supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
Because they would save it and serve it to the next guy, you know, wrap it up in a napkin and just serve it to the next guy. So,
yeah. So they could just say you were served food. And this is one of those where, like, there's a story of, like, someone recounting that, like, a police officer who was doing the bare minimum was like, oh, yeah, you're serving food, right? And a nervous customer was like, yeah, trying to eat the sandwich, this disgusting old, like, desiccated sandwich. And the police officer was like, no, no, no. Gave it back to the bartender. I was like, okay, we're good, and left. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to see you eat that. I just need to know that it's here. Yeah,
that's right.
I made sure there was food here. That's what I have to do for my job. You know, actually, it's funny because, like, that reminds me, like, during lockdown, the bar closest to my house, it sold microwaved hot dogs just wrapped in foil. And they would just have a big pile of them there, like in, you know, a hot pan. And I don't eat meat. So, you know, the first time I went out, I was like, man, I'd love to get a beer, but I know you got to give me one of those. I don't eat meat. Is there any way you could just not give me one? And the bartender was like, no, don't worry. We have a vegetarian option. And there was one hot dog that was just sort of sitting off to the side, wrapped in foil, like a room temperature, just hot dog. She was like, this is the vegetarian option. It's definitely just a hot dog, but you just don't eat it and you bring it back to me when you're done. That's what I did. I would go, she'd hand me my hot dog, I'd go to the table with it, I'd have a beer or two, and I'd bring her back the hot dog. Thank you very much.
Just trade it out for another drink.
That's the vegetarian hot dog.
Not very filling.
That's all right. You're gonna have beer, it's fine. But this time period, it really backfired in the legislators' face, because far be it from, like, restricting drinking and, like, public intoxication, it created one of the most, like wild and free periods of New York there's been. Because you had all these hotels. Well, they didn't have any they didn't have to cut off drinking at any point in time, because it's a private club or a hotel, so they could serve all day and all night. And now they have all these crappy little rooms with just a bed in it. Which, what else can you use those for? It's for, you know, if you want to drink till you're drunk and pass out, if you want to, you know, have some services from a lady or gentleman of the night, you can peruse that. So it just led to this rise in drinking and prostitution.
And illicit sex, unmarried couples, which in those days were very frowned upon. And they would make use of the rooms after a night of drinking and stuff. So those were two consequences that nobody had thought of.
Yep. Led to a, sounds like a pretty good time. Now, I mean, obviously they tried after a while to sort of rein in all of these good times with some further clarification rules, but that just kind of added to the mess. And they're like, well, you know, it's got the sandwich has to cost a certain amount. It's got to be a significant amount on your bill. So then, like, they started just charging more. The sandwich would be a premium cost. It would be like 2-3 times the cost of your drink to have the quote unquote sandwich. And I mean, this again, like, the wealthy didn't care because they could pay whatever. But it only really was aimed at affecting the poor people, which still it was easier to just pay the fee than get arrested. So, you know, you found workarounds.
Yeah. If you really wanted to drink that bad, you could still do it. It just cost you a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things I thought was amazing is it said that prior to that law being passed, there were 13 hotels in Brooklyn. After that law, 6 months after that law was passed, there were 800 hotels in Brooklyn.
Good old Brooklyn.
So what, 787 of them were these kind of hotels.
I just love the sort of malicious compliance. The, like, okay, yeah, we'll follow your rule. their law, but we're going to do it our way.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find a way. Because there's a loophole for the rich. We're going to use that for the poor.
Yeah. And these, and you know, part of it, you could argue, was probably gave a lot of these people that were the temperance people that were trying to get these laws passed for that, that probably really pissed them off. So that that is what led to the bigger push that ended up being prohibition. Mm-hmm. Because they just said, well, by God, we're just going to keep pushing and shut it down. And this is why, no matter what we try to do, these degenerates are still in there drinking on the holy day, on the Lord's day, they're drinking. What are we going to do with these people?
Yeah, well, that is the unfortunate truth, that these laws were only thrown out because a bigger package of prohibition came in, starting in 1919. But you know, we talked about prohibition. Like, people found ways to drink, and a lot of the ways that were built into prohibition that people could drink catered to the rich. This is a consistent thing. When we restrict rights, mm-hmm. The rich are always left out of those conversations. There are always caveats made for people that have money. So I will continue to call out the hypocrisy there and say that whoever found the way around it, they are allowed to, because you know what? if a law is enforced by like a cash measure, what is that quote? Then it can be circumvented by a fine or by a fee or just by having money, then it only applies to the poor.
That's right.
That's inequality.
Well, it, you know, one of the things that it did say, though, is because it kind of like put all these, you know, bars on alert, that by the time prohibition hit, a lot of these ones that had converted to these hotels, guess what they became once prohibition hit?
Speakeasies.
Yeah, they were already set up kind of for that and were already planning in that direction. So it kind of gave them a practice run ahead of time to be ready to convert over to speakeasies.
Well, I don't know why you think that, you know, we have this understanding of bread and circuses. Like, this is the stuff you need to keep the poor masses compliant with horrible conditions. And that is a whole other conversation that's wrong. But also, when you start attacking the bread and or circuses, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
We're gonna find ways to rebel against it. However hard it is to live in New York City, I do love living in a city that has so much specific, like, rebellious alcohol history to it.
And, you know, one of the ones leading the charge at the time was a young Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, he was very anti-drinking.
Very anti-drinking. He was the new head of the police commission. He was the new New York City police commissioner the commission had just been formed. So he was looking to make a name for himself. So he was riding roughshod over all these people going around trying to shut these establishments down and prove himself. And of course, later he became president.
Yeah. And of course it was headed up by like upstate Republicans, but yes, Democrats did join them in the, in the campaign. So there you go. So Cuomo was not on untreaded grounds. I still don't really know what the point was. It was weird because too, it was like, so there was outdoor dining was only okay if you had food, but it's outdoors. Like, you're probably okay if you're outdoors. And also the other angle that I don't know. I know that this was something that I griped about with my fellow restaurant workers. It's like, when restaurants were allowed to open, that also meant that your employers could say, hey, if you're not going to come back to work, then you're like for real, real fired. So you have to come back to work. You can't like collect benefits. Like, you've got to come back to work or permanently lose your job. So people had to go back to work. So a lot of the people that I know that would like be going out and like trying to just have a beer after their shift were the same people that were forced back to work during a plague. You had to go back to work because restaurant owners were allowed to reopen their businesses, and that meant they could threaten your employment. And so you have to go back to work, and you got to work for 8, 12 hours being exposed to a disease, and then they're going to make sure that you only are exposed when it's in service to capitalism. But if you dare go out after you get off and try to have a beer, that we're going to punish you for. These services are only open to the people that have plenty of wealth to spend and don't have to work for it. I don't know. Like, what's the point? If you're not going to protect service workers so they have to go back to work, then why are you also going to punish them?
You know, I really found it from a legal standpoint, too. I kept picturing, because this thing actually went to court when they did it, you know, back in 1896. And it actually went to court for some judge sitting somewhere, a New York judge, to decide what constitutes a meal. And so, you know, they would put forth various things. No, that's not it. No, that's not it. It's kind of like the ruling, the judicial ruling on porn. I'll know it when I see it. We can't give it a definition, but I'll know it when I see it. And it was the same type thing for this. Well, the bare minimum of a meal is a sandwich. That's a legal ruling. That's wild.
How are chicken wings not a meal? But
I don't know that chicken
is.
Wings were that popular then. I mean, now they are. Oh, no, but I don't think they had wings in 1896, did they?
Oh, no. I mean, more recently, like Cuomo specifically ruled out chicken wings.
Yes.
Like
right.
Chicken wings, not a meal.
I've had those for a meal many a night.
I think I would say that what constitutes a sandwich is a lot looser ground than what constitutes a chicken wing.
Yeah.
Chicken wing is a more reliable meal. I've put potato chips between bread and called it a sandwich. It's not really a sandwich, but.
Well, one of Riley's favorite sandwiches is a Crunchy Boy. It's turkey and cheese and lettuce with potato chips on the bottom.
Oh, well, that's a whole meal. That's absolutely a meal. I just mean
it's got all your bread groups.
Sandwich.
Here was another thing I thought was ironic out of that. So you have to have the sandwich to go along with so you can support the vice of drinking, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you know what vice derived the sandwich in the first place?
Drinking? I don't know. Where are we going with this?
Gambling.
Gambling
because,
made sandwiches?
Yeah. The Earl of Sandwich was a famous gambler, and they would have 24, 48 hour card games going on. Well, they had to eat something while that was going on. They couldn't sit there starved. So the people that worked for him invented the sandwich as a way that he could sit there and eat while he was playing all these all day, all night card games. And that's where the sandwich came from. So it was actually in support of another vice of gambling.
So sandwiches were born in sin and they continue to accompany sin.
Yeah, that seems to be the solution to absolve any sin is a sandwich.
This is why I love sandwiches.
That's like that old Twilight Zone episode or whatever, Twilight Zone or what was the other Rod Suling one? The Sin Eater. That was a type thing.
I don't remember that one.
That was a classic one.
Well,
but then it comes back to roost in 2020.
Yeah, well, it was a lawless time then. I don't like just buying like quarts of cocktails from bars and you can't drink this in like a 10-foot parameter of the front of our bar. But if you want to walk around the corner, there's a parking lot where I think everybody's drinking, and that's basically a bar. It's like, okay.
Well, here's something I don't understand either, though. Growlers, and now they're probably in other cities and bigger cities than here. They have been around for a while.
Yeah.
But around here, growlers had just hit like a year or two prior to COVID. So you could take your growler to places that were designated growler refill places, which include like a drugstore. There's a drugstore that we would go to because they had the biggest selection. But you go there and you could just buy your beer and get it in a growler and leave. You didn't have to get any food with it. But yet when COVID came and they were letting the bars try to struggle and stay open, you take a growler to a bar, you also had to buy, they had to have food that you bought along with the growler.
Just to take a growler home.
Yeah. Yeah. But you were still taking a growler home before that. Yeah. If you went to one of these places, but now you're going to a bar, which didn't technically it wasn't a growler location, refill location. Those were applied for specifically, you know?
Well, that's why then.
Yeah. But I still think, what's the difference? They gave us a box of crackers. I remember the first time I went and got one filled up at a bar down on the 9th Street Plaza, and they gave me a box of crackers. And I said, what is this for? I said, well, you have to have food. Well, apparently you didn't even have to meet the sandwich regulation. The box of crackers was good enough.
Well, I mean, a lot of it too, like, I don't know, not to be a cynic, but a lot of it, like, especially here in New York, like, it was driven by different lobbyists that had specific pockets to lie in. Like, why was the to-go drink thing killed in New York? Even though it was a great way for bars to actually, like, if you are somebody who's like, let's say you're immunocompressed and you want to go and like get some nice cocktails to bring back to your house, you should have been able to do that. The mm-hmm. reason that went away is not because there's anything unsafe about it, but because liquor stores had people that spoke for them in like political circles that right. were angry that bars could sell. They wanted that only to have liquor to go from liquor stores. So that's what killed that. And like,
yeah,
it's not about actual safety. It's just about how do we get the most money out of people to make the people that have money happy. It's always the case, which is going back to the original Rain's Law. Why were there giant loopholes built in for rich people? Because there always are, because rich people are the people that meant these laws. And they always make sure that they can still live the life they want to lead. They just don't want the rest of us to have the same. So don't get mad at
okay. Don't get mad at what?
Well, I was gonna say, don't get mad at the bars that are just trying to struggle and exist. Get mad at the rich people that make these laws that are purposely incomprehensible because they have to have loopholes for themselves.
Well, I was going to say, New York wasn't the only place that imposed something like that. You had that in Alameda County, along with Napa and Sonoma, because they would have wine tastings out there. And so in 2020, the health department, this wasn't even the state legislature or anything, the health department imposed that these wineries out there, which, of course, wine tastings are a large tourist industry. I'm sure the state of California makes billions of dollars a year from the tourist industry going to wine tastings. They said, if you have a wine tasting, you have to serve food as well. Now, this was also in 2020 during the return from COVID, and it had to be outdoors and you had to serve meals. Well, most of these wineries, they weren't equipped to serve meals. So, you know, they didn't have a license to do that. And the places that restaurants that could serve you a meal, they didn't have the wines to do the tastings. So it was like, hey, what are you doing? You're destroying our industry here. And the health department was saying, no, that's just the way it's going to be. If you're going to go, and it prevents it from becoming a pub crawl. Now, I have not been to a lot of wine tastings, but I don't think they're anything similar to a pub crawl.
I think it is interesting how there's got to be a moral underpinning to this, right? Like, it's got, because we didn't say like, hey, you can't go to Forever 21 and then a Sephora and then a Walgreens. You can't shop at three stores. You can only go shop at one store a day. But the idea that, oh, you can't go to multiple wineries, like, they're all like, it's not any different than just visiting three different businesses. But there's this moral idea around alcohol, like, you don't need that. So you shouldn't be able to have it at will. Like, you don't need a lot of the things you go buy in stores.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're forgetting, again, the hypocrisy, like, it's okay. I'm fully in support of like, oh, just shut down everything. But why are there special rules made because of this weird, like, but alcohol is for bad people. So we want to restrict the bad people.
Yeah. Well, it didn't last very long. I think that lasted for about a month. And I think that there was enough pressure on them from several different industries that it stood to effect. And especially with trying to recover from COVID, that it only stood for about a month. But somebody had suggested that they come up with the Alameda sandwich to compete with the Rain sandwich there.
I mean, that's fair. Wow. It's wild times.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And you told me to check out Prohibition sandwich.
This was like something about prohibition and sandwiches. I know there's a story there. Let's do it.
And the rain sandwich popped right up. Yep.
So, and I guess I know you mentioned this when we were talking about it, but like McSorley's Ale House here in the city, it's ancient beer bar. You should, it's one of those places that you should go if you're in the city. It's small and it's crowded and you might not always get a seat, but it's worth it if you go. They have like two kinds of beer you can buy. That's it. It's great.
Really? But well, I want to go by there and see, because they said one of the things that they did to comply with this is they would serve cheese and onion and bread, I guess, or cheese and onion cracker or something like that.
Well,
and they said to this day that they still have tongue in cheek, a version of that. And I'm wondering what that is that they have.
So that was actually, so they served that before the law went down, but the law specifically forbade any sort of free lunch situation. So you couldn't give food as an incentive, which is a thing that you still hear. Like you can't give like food, like free buffet and then drinks you pay for, like stuff like that. Like you can't have an incentive to drink. So that was what part of Rain's Law was like, McSorley's had a free lunch, which was, bread, cheese and onion, raw onions, some sort of sandwich that you could get. And then they had to do away with that, but then they brought it back as like a sort of tongue in cheek thing. Because if you are providing anything free, then you are incentivizing drinking.
Well, this place has continuously been a bar since 1854. I find that pretty remarkable.
And it looks like it. It looks like it. It's
I hope it doesn't have any old rain sandwiches laying around there.
I think
the 1800s.
Honestly, probably. But it's a cool spot. It's like one of those New York institutions. It's a little off the beaten path. It's like in the Lower East Side area, but it's cool. They do like free service for firefighters a couple times a year or something like that. It's a good spot.
We might have checked that out sometime.
Yeah. But yeah, so there you go. There's some modern history linking up with past history about how stupid laws are.
Well, if anybody ever asks you what is the minimum standard for a meal, now you know.
Yeah, but even
sandwich.
There's been so much debate over what is and isn't a sandwich that I don't think that's a good, like, what is it a hot dog is a sandwich? It's Hot Pockets.
Is a hamburger a sandwich?
I mean, yeah. A taco is a sandwich, right?
I don't know.
Is a Twinkie a sandwich? Bread, exterior.
It's a confection.
Filling. It's got an interior filling and an exterior.
I don't know. There was some pastries at a pastry shop we used to get that they used to call cream hot dogs, but they were actually more like a pastry filled with cream, but they just were long, kind of hot dog shaped.
I think if that law was reenacted today, you could get creative with the definition of a sandwich, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Which clearly
yeah, probably so. That would be hard to determine. A taco's a meal. I mean, otherwise, what happens to Taco Tuesday? So, you know, it must be a meal.
Well, like, what if you serve chicken wings and fries and you put the chicken wing between two fries? That's a sandwich.
I don't know, but I think chicken wings are different nowadays than maybe they were then. I don't know.
Well, this was
chicken wings are a meal. I mean, I order that just for a meal a lot of times.
Cuomo had something specific against chicken wings. Maybe he's just not a fan of chicken wings.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't like chicken.
Thank you for joining us on this little historical law adjacent episode of Neat. There are many pre-prohibition and prohibition era confections drinks that I promote. I do not promote the prohibition era sandwich. thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. I'm glad we got to research that. I would love historical things that you.
I thought you would like
to learn about.
Thank you all for joining us. If you want to find us on our socials, we are NeatTheBoozeCast on Instagram. We are NeatTheBoozeCast@gmail.com. You can email us your questions, comments, what have you. We have a Patreon if you want to help support the podcast. That's what helps this get made. You can do that. And if you want to talk about sandwiches, you can do that.
Need to Boozecast group page on Facebook.
Where do you do that?
Take a picture of your brick sandwich and send it in.
Yeah. right. Well, hey, I've been Gary Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
You know, you always see those movies where, like, somebody's threatening somebody and they throw a brick through the window with a note tied to it. This could be like a whole sandwich that you threw through the window with a note tied to it. Serve better sandwiches or you'll get more of this. Or something. I don't know.
Don't do that. So if you're a local Subway, don't do that.
They threw a sandwich in the window.
It's a big sandwich. It's a knuckle sandwich. What that?
Yeah, there you go. Does a knuckle sandwich constitute a meal?